Hey, welcome to Parshas Kisisa, Tavshin Ayin Tes, and in Yirtzeh Hashem, we're going to talk about the Parsha of the Egel Hazav, but believe it or not, there's a lot of positive things that we can point out about the Egel. It's not all bad, it's not all misery. So Yirtzeh Hashem, let's just learn a couple of psukim, we'll learn more psukim later, but the first one is going to talk about the Egel as in its totality. Oh, welcome. He gives him the two luchais, and then we go on, and take a look in Pasuk Zion. I'm sorry, we don't have our chumashim out today, they're still in the room. Time to go down, because your nation, Nebuch, has done a terrible thing. Asher Lisa Beretz Mitzrayim, that they came out of Mitzrayim, Soru Mahir Min HaDerech. They've gone quickly off the Derech, Asher Tzivisi, the Derech Tzivisi that I've commanded them. Also, the Egel Masech, they made themselves a molten calf. Vayishtachlo, Vayizbuchaloi, Vayomer, and they said, Elo Lehech, Yisrael, these are your gods, Asher Halisa, Halucha, Meretz Mitzrayim, they brought you out of Egypt. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe Reisius Omazevine Am Che Oirevu is a stiff-necked nation. And the rest of the psukim are many, many psukim, so we won't do them. But we all know that we once said over a beautiful thing from Rabbi Ephraim Waxman. Ephraim Waxman said that his great-grandfather was a brother to the great-grandfather of the notorious, infamous Yossi Lapid, who was a person who was trying to secularize the Jewish nation, was trying to literally destroy it as a Jewish entity. And he said, and so how is it that he said, I'm standing here, how am I standing here in front of you, and I'm wearing a shtreimel, and I'm a frum person, I'm speaking to thousands of people, and this person is what he is. And he said, when the winds of secularism blew across Europe, he says, some Jews were not able to withstand the wind, and some did. He says, his grandfather, great-grandfather, gave in and became secular, and lost his connection to Torah, and this is what you get now, 100 years later. He says, my great-grandfather stood fast, and he stayed as an Erlich Yid, and had Yiddish Adiris, and that's why I'm standing in front of you today. So he says, when it's Torah tells us ki am shei ayrav hu, that Hashem says an am shei ayrav, that's not all bad. Being an am shei ayrav is really what's kept us all the years, and it started out in our DNA, in our spiritual DNA from Avraham Avinu. We can't even imagine what Avraham Avinu was like. Everywhere he went, he was the only one who was talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everybody else was worshiping idols. So everybody told him, Avraham Avinu, you're meshug, you're out of your mind, you're crazy. What are you doing? And we're going to put you in an oven, in the Kibshon Eish. We're going to put you into the pit, because they couldn't even take it. So what would most people say? You know, I can't stand up to them. But Avraham Avinu was able to stand up to them. And that's the kayav that we have, that we're still here today. And, you know, we live in a society, we just had an interesting meeting with a PR firm, and we were talking about how the society has changed so much that 10 or 20 years ago, Yidden were so much in tune with the, maybe 50 years ago, with the general world, had the same moral values, they had the same spiritual values, may have been differences, but we were basically part of this whole conglomerate called the culture of the world. And now we're so different. The world is veered off in very, very, very bad places. And we're keeping it. So how do we do it? And the truth is, Nebuch, you look outside and not everybody can do it. There are some people who've fallen away. But because we're an Am Kshei Arif, Hashem said, you're an Am Kshei Arif. You're stiff-necked people. You don't give in so easily. Sometimes it gets you in trouble. But also, it keeps you who you are. As Rabbi Sher Zichron Yildrach used to say, I don't know who he said it from, but a Gadol said it, that Klal Yisrael is like a tea bag. It does best when it's in hot water. So that was his word. So here's Rav Galinsky. I want to say three things. And Mishnah, then we'll say something from last week's shir, to add a little nekuda. We know in Milane every week there are seven aliyahs. There's seven different people go up to the Torah and get the aliyah. They make a bracha before, they make a bracha after, the Balkar lanes. So let's say the parsha is 100 psukim, for example. let's say make it 105, it'll be more even. So each one of the seven aliyahs gets approximately 15 psukim to it. That's the way most aliyahs go, and they're pretty much even, a few psukim here, because you want to make it that it should come out with the same topic, so you don't want to stop in the middle of a story, but pretty much there's a certain amount of psukim, and pretty even. However, in this parsha is unusual from almost all the parshas that almost all of the aliyahs are in the first two aliyahs. All of psukim, if you're in shul this Shabbos, listen carefully, and you'll be saying, wow, this is a kayin going on forever. And then Levi says, and he explains like this. He says the kayin has 44 psukim. 44 psukim. The Levi has 46 psukim. That means the kayin and Levi together have 90 psukim. And the rest of the five aliyahs have 43. Salo davru. Why is it that they should have so many in the first two parshas, in the first two aliyahs, and have so few in the end? So this is a famous question. And in the Sefer Magen Avram, the Magen Avram says, B'shem the Knesset HaGedolah, Shenoyegim Likra Levi Parshas HaEgel. Why do we give it to the Levi and to the Kayan? So he says, Kasa Shekach Tikna Rishonim Shekibla Mekadmainen Mishum Sheshevet Levi Lo Yishtati B'chetz Egel. Because of all the tribes, of all the Shvatim, who wasn't part of the Chet Egel? The Kayan, the Levium, right? The Levium, we're not part of the Chet Egel. So therefore, they were the ones who actually, you know, came out with Mi Hashem Eli. Olechein lo yifka kain v'alev mikriyat parasha zu. The Kayan and Levium aren't going to feel bad from this parasha. They won't get nifka, they won't feel hurt. However, Avo im Yikru b'vnei Yisrael, but a regular Yisrael, a person like myself, gets on Leah, Yachli move Yivayshu, he's going to be embarrassed. He's going to say, these are my ancestors over here. She Yikiru lai, she Saba Rabba shalai, that his Saba Rabba, as I learned in the word Saba Rabba, not just a great great, but like way up there, great grandfather. What's Saba Rabba? What do you normally say? Great grandparents and above, I guess, because Saba Rabba. I remember I had an aunt whose Einifach, I think she heard were Einifach, her great grand called her Super Safta. that's Safta and Super Safta. So leave name Mea Dyrus, 100 Dyrus, Shleish Allah from Shleish Mea Shana, 3,300 years ago. So Rav Galinsky, I don't understand this. He says, would you really be embarrassed by something some answer to you did 300 years ago? Right? You didn't know him. It's 125 generations ago. It's over 100 generations. Why we made a halacha not to embarrass a yid, right? Because he got the aliyah, and he's going to feel terrible, and we're so sensitive to his feelings that we're not going to make an aliyah. Who really worries so much about, I mean, I didn't know my grandfather. I don't know my great-grandfather. I don't know anything. You know, even my great-grandfather, I was told they did something. Would I feel so bad? What's the pshat? This happened so long ago. So he says, maybe you'll say, well, okay, who gets shlishi in the normal shul that goes to the rav? The shul gets shlishi. So he says, so maybe the rav is such a chashuv person, and he's so spiritual, he'll take a feel bad. He'll say, I feel bad about this happened. He says, but you can't say that. Why? Because there's a Gemara, interesting Gemara that says, the Mishnah Megillah says like this, that Maisa Ego is Nikra Matargim. That means in those days, I mean, if you think laning, they used to actually translate the laning in between aliyahs. So they lane the aliyah, and then somebody would go up and translate it. I don't know, maybe by the Svardin they do it, but Yekas did. I don't know if anybody, he says the Taimonim still do it today. But he says, and the Gemara asks, Pshita, of course, why shouldn't you be Matargamit? Why shouldn't you translate it? So the Gemara answers, I mean, the Mishnah answers, Ma'od the Taimel, you know, I remember that we should be worried of the covenant of Klal Yisrael, that the one who hears it will be Nifka, he'll feel embarrassed, he'll say, I feel so bad. So therefore, we should translate it because this way they'll get kapara. This way they'll have a kapara because they'll feel bad and they'll do tshuva and that'll be it. So it's good. It's worth translating for them so they should understand it. So he says, you see that we've, even something they had 3,300 years ago, we don't allow you to do it today. We changed the whole Seder. So what's the shot over here? How could that be? So he tells a story. I don't know if it's a true story. Yes, I heard it when he was young, but you'll hear it might not be a true story. But he says like this, they were laning about Yosef and his brothers. They were laning about Yosef and his brothers in Shul. And there was a lady up in the Ezra's Noshim who screams out, Yosef, watch out! The brothers, they don't like you. Don't go! It's not a good thing to go. Don't go! Be careful! And he says, and Nebuch, Yosef didn't listen to her, and Yosef went, and he saw what happened. So he says, the next year, so he went, she told the lady next to him, probably he didn't listen to me last year, I'm not going to tell him. He doesn't listen to me. That's the way these kids are. You know, they don't listen, he's 17 years old, and he's going to do the same thing again. Okay, I give up. What can I do? So he says, people made fun of her, but this Pasea, this foolish lady, he says, but she wasn't foolish. She lived the Sedra. To her, the Sedra was as real as if it happened now. It was happening. She saw Yosef going to his doom, and she couldn't take it anymore. She said, stop, Yosef, because she felt it. I remember Rabbi Reisman, we've said this before, that Rabbi Reisman said that, Rabbi Reisman's father was a baker, Reisman's cookies, yes, you know. So he said every year when he was a kid, it bothered him very much that the baker was the one who was put to death, and the wine steward, he was allowed to live. And he used to daven to Hashem, maybe this year can make it the other way. Let the baker live, and the other way to go to... Because it's not fair to the bakers. What did the baker, you know? His father was a baker. So he said, you see that some people, when they live the parsha, and they feel the parsha, remember about Victor Miller said, and I remember I listened to it, he said in the shir, he says, people say that you shouldn't talk about the week's events in the part and during Shabbos table. You shouldn't talk about many. Most people, you know, they talk about what happened this week and the news and so on and what everybody thinks and so. People say you shouldn't talk about it. So I disagree. He says you should talk about it. You should say, did you know Avraham Avinu went out from Haran? Did you know? Did you hear about Yosef went to his brothers? That's current events. By Yid, you should feel it. You should feel the parsha as if it's alive to you. It's not something that happened thousands of years ago. It's something that's happening today. Something that makes us feel that we're right here. And it's taka true. When you, and I think by many even taka zai, you sit by the Shabbos table. If somebody will get up, this week is Parshas Ki Sisa, right? Somebody will get up and say a Dvar Torah on Parshas Vayechi. Everyone will look at him. What are you doing? That was 2 months ago. We're in the middle of Kisisa over here. We're in the middle of the Egel Azov. What are you talking about that? Somebody goes, I was in the Sheva Brachas. Somebody got up and said a Dvar Torah, a different Sedra. Everyone looked at him. It's this week's Sedra. We're living this week's Sedra. Don't give me last week's Sedra. 2 weeks ago. You can't even say, by the time Tuesday comes around, it's already not so, the same last week's Sedra already is a little bit, So we should live the Parsha. He says, that's what it's telling us. It's a lesson. That if we really live the Parsha, and we learned about the Egel, we'd say, I feel bad about the Egel. Oh, you got a little bit of the Egel in me too. I got to do tshuva. I got to think about it. And therefore, we're sensitive to it. So everybody has to live the Parsha. That's the lesson he gives us. He says, we go on to the, when we talk about, take a look in Pasuk, Lamed Beis Pasuk Vav. Let's look in Lamed Beis Pasuk Vav. So the Pasuk tells like this. So he tells them, the Amche Irif, and they come back down. Pasuk, going back. Pasuk Vav. It's Vayashkimo Mimachras. The Yidden got, and the next day, Vayalu Oilos, and they made Oilos, that means they made Karbonos of Oilos. Vayikshu Shlomim, and they brought near Shlomim. Vayeshavam, Lechav Shots, Vayikum Litzachik. And they sat down to eat, and they got up to Litzachik, they got up to sport. So the Shaila is, why did they bring Oilos and Shlomim? Is there any significance in the fact that it was an oila and then a shlomim? We know, what's the difference between oila and shlomim? An oila goes out all the shemayim, right? It's all in the mizbeach. And a shlomim, the people eat it, right? The korban pesach, these are all shlomim, because we eat it as well. So what was the significance of giving an oila and a shlomim? And it's an amazing thing, because we learn so many things about the karbanis, and we don't think about it, we just like sort of run through it. And when you learn something, and somebody tells you a dvar Torah, and you see that everything's with a cheshbon, everything has a meaning to it, and it's not pashut. So he says like this. He tells a story about Dr. Moshe Sneh. And you know who Dr. Moshe Sneh was? Okay. He has a son of Ephraim Sneh. You know Ephraim Sneh?
I thought you were making a joke with like Moshe and Sneh.
Oh, no, his name was Dr. Moshe Sneh. He's from, no, oh, he was in Poland. And his name was Dr. Moshe, a real person. I saw his picture, actually. And he was a leader of the Communist Party in Israel. He was the founder of the Communist Party of Israel. And he came to, and he led, he was a member of the Maki, the different communist parties. He was the head of the Communist Party for many years until his death in 1972. And he has a son, Ephraim Sneh, who was the minister of something, has also been a member of the Knesset. So this was a family with, you know, real Tzioni roots in the beginning of the State of Israel. So this person, he says, he held, what he held, he, in his speeches, he said that the communist, the vision of communism, of everybody being equal, of the world, you know, being socialist and everybody's going to share everything, the government will, you know, give everything out, and everybody, there'll be free medical care. I mean, you hear this today, free medical care, and there'll be free college, and there'll be free, everything will be free, and everything to share. There'll be no rich, there'll be no poor. This was the vision of communism. Now we know what happened. We'll see in a minute why, but this was his vision. So he said like this. So that's what he said. So he said in that he met, it sounds like he met him, and he said that he held this in Stalin. They were so oduk. So the people, the Jews, were so, you know, they were so, the mamash, that communism meant so much to them that even when Stalin took them and killed them, when they were walking to the firing squad, they used to say, "Long live the revolution." In other words, they really held the mapei, what they call the mapei, for the revolution, was something that was to them, lahad l'kodesh kadosh. So he said like this. So he said that they all stayed communism. So he says in that tekufa, he said the following maisa happened with the Slutsky Rav. Rav Zalman Meltzer was the father-in-law of Rav Aaron Cutler, and he was known as the Slutsky Rav. So a woman came to him, a young woman, and she said as follows. This was in Russia, communism. So she said, "I had a baby. My husband is an officer in the Tsar's army, right, in the Red Army. Not the Tsar, forget it. I mean, wrong to Kufis, in the Red Army. And he doesn't want to give bris milah to the child. And I wanted to have bris milah. So what do I do?" So he says, "Call the husband. Call your husband. I want to talk to him." So he calls him in, and he says, "Listen, I understand you're boss in the Red Army, so you're nervous, you're scared, you know, if do bris milah, you know, can happen if they find out. So he says, you go on vacation, you go on leave, and I'll take care of it with the moil, and you don't have to worry about if something chas v'shalom is going to happen, they'll come to me. You know, you're off the hook." So he said to him, "Rabbi, you don't understand. The reason I'm against bris milah is not because I'm worried about bris milah. I'm against the concept of bris milah, because I'm part of the new wave of communism. I'm part of the revolution. And the revolution is the future for all the rest of the world. There's nothing to talk about. That's the old world. You're talking about the old world. I'm talking about the new world." So he tells him, "Let me ask you something." So it's amazing what he tells him, because he didn't like it flustered. This was a Gadol B'Yisrael. So he says, "Listen, you're Jewish. Lamaisa, you're Jewish. You ever play dreidel?" What's that got to do with anyway? Like, where'd that come from? So he says, "Okay, I'll tell you why." He says, "The way a dreidel works, you have four things, it's the top, and it all goes on one little nekuda. It's not broad based, it's one nekuda, and you spin it, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes. And you know what happens after it stops? It falls down." So he says, "The same thing that happened with communism. Communism is built on one single concept. And when that one single concept goes, the world is going to fall down. That'll be the end of it." And he said like this. He says, "You should know what is communism on the idea that everyone's going to share equally." He says, "The Torah tells Beferish that's not the way the world was set up. A pasuk in Kehelis, Dalet Dalet, it says, Re'is ani is called Omel. I saw all the work. That's called Kishron, and all of the genius that's put into making the world work and making all the inventions and all the things in the world. And kihi kinas ish mereihu. And what makes it all go is the kina, is jealousy. The reason people I ask you a question. You ever heard of Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, right? Why do these guys retire and go sit in the basement and learn, right? Or do whatever they do. Why? Because they got to be the richest. It's not enough that I've got $100 billion and I can take private airplanes everywhere and fly, you know, when you ever go into a plane and, you know, we make the right to the back of the plane and, the chashuvim are sitting up in the first class. He can fly first class where he wants. He's got everything he wants. All the yachts he could want, all the food he could want. So why does he keep working? The answer is, says Kohelis, Ishmerei, Gamzeh Hevel Rus Ruach. That's also Hevel. But that's what makes the world go. He says, communism is going against the very core of how people operate, and it can't last. And it will not continue. That's what he told him. So the guy tells him he wasn't impressed. He says, you know what? Communism can be forever. He says, you know something? I see that I have disagreement with the Rav. I think communism is going to be here forever. I think the revolution is here forever. And you say not. You say it's going to fall like the top. How many years do you think it's going to last? So Rabbi Sazama turned and said 70. You know how long it lasted? Just over 70 years. It started in October of 1917, and it fell apart in 88, 89, around the Tikufa. So it was, if maybe it was off a year, depending when you say communism, it started the October Revolution, the Spring Revolution, the, you know, like different when it was consolidated, when, you know, 18, whatever it is. But communism just lasted about 70 years. So it was amazing. This Rabbi Zalman said it's going to last 70 years. So I just want to stop for a second and comment. Why 70 years? How did he know that? Was it a nevuah? I think there's a different... I think that he was just... We said it last week as the answer. We said Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that somebody eats olives. You remember this? If you eat an olive, you'll remember for 70 years your Torah. You'll forget 70 years of Torah. And if you eat olive oil, you'll remember 70 years of Torah. So we asked, what's one got to do with the other? So he said, because an olive is keeping the oil inside. So if you keep the oil inside and you learn Torah, when the person's 70 years are up, that's the end of the Torah because he's gone. If you do olive oil, that means you're giving the oil to spreading it to other people. Spreading to other people, it'll be 70 years you'll remember Torah because the Torah will go long after the person's not here anymore. His Torah will always be there for others to enjoy. And we said, why 70 years? Because that's the lifetime of a person. I once heard that, you know how wars start? Wars start when the last soldier of the previous war dies. What does that mean? As long as that soldier's alive, he reminds the world of how awful war is. And nobody wants to have a war. The minute the last soldier dies, it gets forgotten. And the younger people never experienced war. Do you know that at the beginning of the Civil War, the first battle of the Civil War, people brought a picnic on the side of the battlefield, and they brought sandwiches, because they said, let's watch, it'll be interesting. And then they saw people being shot and killed, and all of the... Because the Revolutionary War was already set, 7 years before, and they forgot about it. So as long as he says for 70 years is a lifetime. So what happens? The next door comes in, and they say, we don't want this. We see through it. So one generation gets frakishim with communism, the next generation already forgets it. They're already no longer involved. So why should you have a bris mila on your child? He says, because when communism falls, so everybody just go back to their original culture and their original place. Your son won't have where to go back to. And therefore you should do a bris mila so that when communism falls, he'll have to go back to his people. Because every new mishigas comes along, everybody's running to it, and you'll see he'll go back. So he says, Itaki gave him the bris mila. He gave him. But you see what he said is that 70 years after that, he says, Dr. Moshe Snow was Nifter, and the next person that got up who took over him, his name was Moshe something. And the next person after, what was his name? Mayor Vilner. The next person who took over the Communist Party got up. By this time, communism was tishmetered. He went up and he went to a shul. And he went into a shul and he said to Inu, we were mistaken. We were all wrong. And even this Moshe Sneh, when he died, he left at Savo, they should bury him in Kever Yisrael and say Kaddish for him. So here you go.
Wasn't an Eretz Yisrael something in the government?
Yeah. Oh, very good. Yeah, snap. See, somebody remember. Yeah, he was the head of the Communist Party. Dr. Moshe Snat, his son of Freim Snat.
What years?
Until from 54 to 72, they said. So he was there for a long time.
Generation.
Well, before us, yeah. But then Freim Snat, his son, came over. So he said, that's the shot over here also. So the Klal Yisrael, that they Taka had a sin. They Taka did it. But they can come back. They went to the side. They got in a behola and they went off. So it says like this, beautiful. Now we go back to our pasuk, and the pasuk is mamish beautiful. And he says this is how it works with every mapecha, every revolution. You know what they say? Every revolution eats itself and eventually kills itself, because the first people are all, you know, they're all dedicated. You know, then the kids say, I don't want to be meshuggah like my parents. I don't have to, you know, give up everything for this or kill people. And they start to go away from it. And then by the time you get to the Einikot, they're already something else. So he says, like the Vayalu Oilais, it says they made an Oila. He says, you know what type? What's an Oila? An Oila is a korban that goes straight up to Shemayim. He says, that's the first generation. The first, right away, the first thing they started, the Eagle, they were all, boom, Vayalu Oilais, right? We're going to make an Oila. He says, but then they calmed down a little bit. And then they went and they said, what's next? He says, then they went, then already they started to calm down. They got less, revolutionary fervor. They started, it's like even the revolutions, the minute they start governing, you know, the graft comes back and the corruption comes back and all. So they started to eat shlomim. Then it says, so then they got even less farther away from the Egel Azov revolution. And they started to eat and drink. And then finally, then they got up to sport, then they got up to taka, started doing aveiras and things like that. The farther you get away from the revolution, the more you go back to who you were before. So the same thing, the yidden, the farther they got away from the eagle, that momentary panic that seized them at the beginning, not seeing Moshe Rabbeinu, the more they started to calm down, and the more they became back to themselves. So he said, tells one story, quick story, that before the Milchama, there was a basis of Mediach. There was a person who was not a good person. He was a writer, as they had all these writers with the poison pen. We have lots of them today, too. And they spend their entire time, his name was Freuchen, and they spend their entire time trying to tear down Yiddishkeit. They munch, they write bitter articles, vicious articles against Yiddin. This goes on today also. There's the foreword, which Baruch Hashem, I'm pleased to announce, stopped publishing a printed edition, and they have to fire 40% of their staff, and they're only online now because they spend most of their time attacking. That's their matar, to attack from people, trying to bring down Yiddishkeit. The foreword is from the old Bundisten, the old Labor Party, you know, from Amol. So this guy, Freuchen, was that type of person. Okay. Comes after the war, he moved to America, and he became a frum Yid. So the Panavizhar Rav met him in America. And the Panavizhar Rav said, hey, Freuchen, you were like the worst. you couldn't say a nice word about from people. And now I see you sitting with a yarmulke and I see you in shul. What's going on? So this is what he told him. He says, I was in Warsaw at the beginning of the war, and they were bombing the city, Nebuch, and people were dying, and everybody was running, and I was running, and I was no longer a writer. I no longer had a newspaper. All of those things were gone from me. I was wearing tattered clothes, and they started to bomb the city. I went into a shul, and I dove under a table, because under the table, maybe I'll have some security. And I'm laying under the table, shaking, and I hear noise next to me under the table. I look, and there's two bachrim sitting there, and they're learning Gemara with each other. Sitting learning Gemara. And I said, these people are eternal. This is the real people. Not what I had. Everything that I said and had was not the emes. This is the emes. Because the Ivanti Jekana Mayana Nitzri, this is where the eternal well is. La'elo ha'marvim imenot smoyes. They're able, they have a place to still their thirst. I'd never had that. All I had was the bitterness of attacking somebody else. And it's Taka Rachmanis, because you look at the people who spend their time attacking Yiddishkeit, they don't have any nachas or happiness in themselves. Their whole mahus is attacking others. But he was able, Baruch, for whatever reason, this guy was able to turn it around. Okay, let's do one last thing. says V'daber Hashem l'maisha, and then we want to just add to last week if we have a minute. Lech rei, go down, ki sheiches amcha asher leisim eretzrayim soro mahir min aderech. And we said, Hashem said they went quickly off the derech. So he says we have to think about what was the tefiyah, what was the complaint about the Ribbono Shel Olam that it had on them. So it doesn't say soro min haderech. It doesn't just say they went off the derech. They went quickly off the derech. It says had they sat and they waited a few hours, Moshe Rabbeinu would have set up. The whole egel that we're suffering from, because it says in every door Hashem takes a little piece of the egel out on Klal Yisrael, thousands of years later is because they couldn't wait a few hours. All of them couldn't wait a few hours. And because of that, so the taina was soro mahir. Why did you go so quickly off the derech? Why didn't you just calm down? Take a minute, think about it. He says that was the same problem with the Nachash and Chava. The Nachash comes to Chava, and he says, you know, he fools her into it, and she takes it to Adam. And Nebuch, the same thing. He said, Chazal tells us that had waited, the Zohar says, had they waited till that night, the tikkun of the oilam would have come. So all of the mis and all things we have all of the years is because soro maher, because they couldn't wait any time for this to happen. And that, he says, the way to attack the Yetzirah is to say, wait, to have the kayach to tell him, wait. He tells a story, a marshal from, there was a Yid who went to Paris, and he was very hungry, and he went into a kosher restaurant. He saw a sign on the door, it said, eat today, tomorrow is free. So he liked that. He says, well, I'll eat today, and tomorrow is free. So he paid the guy, and he came back the next day to eat some more. So the guy sees he's really starting to pack it in. He says, do you realize this? You're eating a lot, it's going to cost you. He says, what do you mean? It said on the sign, eat today, you know, tomorrow is free. So he says, yeah, but today, that was yesterday. Today is today again. So you still have to pay for it. So he says, if you can push off one day what you have, things can be different. He says, that's the kayach of fighting the Yetzirah, is to be able to push him off, that every time he comes to you, one moment you should do it. And the famous story is the story of this, that says this is a Stipler story, that we know that Stipler, everyone knows the story, but we'll say it because mention the Stipler, Heiliger Stipler, and that he was in the Russian army. And they used to have guard duty on every night. And one night that he had guard duty, and the previous person who had guard duty took off the heavy coat they used to give. They didn't have enough money for everybody to have a coat, so he had a heavy coat that the guard wore because it was very cold out, and he put it on the tree. So Stipler said, ooh, I can't take it off the tree, you're not allowed to use a tree. So what am I going to do? He says, on the other pikuach nefesh, you have to. He says, okay, I'll do it in 5 minutes. So his 5 minutes came by, and he says, oh, you know, pikuach nefesh, you have to take off the tree. Says, yeah, but I probably could wait another 5 minutes. And that's how he went the whole night. That's the story of the stipler. He was able the whole night. So the Aveira is Saru Maher. So we said last week that Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember, that why when Moshe Rabbeinu said, Mecheni no misifra chasher kasavta, to defend the Jewish people, what he was really doing is he was a Gilgal of Noach. And therefore, he was trying to misaken what Noach did not do. And Hashem is giving the test the second time. So the first time Hashem said, I'm going to destroy the world, and what did Noach say? Nothing. He didn't fight with it. The second time Hashem said, I'm going to destroy the Yidden, Moshe Rabbeinu right away got up and said, Mecheni no misifracha. And says the Arizal that he spent his whole life, Moshe Rabbeinu davening, to overcome the chet that he had done as Noach of not davening. And the raya is that the word mecheni, wipe me out, stands for mei Noach, right? We said it's the same letters as mei Noach. So we showed that there was a tremendous connection. So Miriam Rubin sent me an email, and she said, very nice to show this illusion that Moshe and Noach have a connected soul, is how did Noach get saved? What did he go into? What was the name of the thing he went? He went into a teva. And let me ask you something. Does anybody know? And he was in the water, and the teva saved him. Who else was in the water that could have drowned? And how was he saved? Moshe. Does he know what he was put into? He was also put into a teva. Mm-hmm. It was a little teva, not the same size as the other teva, but he was also put into a teva. So the teva, we see another connection between Moshe Rabbeinu and Noach. But not only that, what does the word teva mean? Word. Right? It's the word, the teva, because it was the teva, the words that Moshe Rabbeinu said. It wasn't just the teva, it was meramez. The word teva also means the word. The word that Moshe Rabbeinu said was a tikkun for the neshama of Noach. So Baruch Hashem, we see, we come back, and I just want to mention, thank you very much. I appreciate it. To be able to add it to it. And somebody else told me I said this over Shalom Shabbos in my neighborhood, somebody said that also says Vayinochem, also that Hashem regretted that he had destroyed the world, and then it says Vayinochem by what he did with Klal Yisrael also. So he says another connection between Moshe and Noach is that he regretted Kiviyach, whatever that means, he regretted it because of the tefillah, he was able to say, I'm not going to do it anymore. So we see Baruch Hashem, the Yidden went to the Egel, but as we said, they were in Amkshei Oirif, and we learned the lesson of Saru Mahir, that if we shouldn't go too fast. We learned the lesson of being stiff-necked in the right time. We learned all the lessons that we can learn from the way the Yidden. We learn how the parsha has to be a parsha that we live every day. If we take lessons from it and we talk about it, then it's our parsha, and it's not something that happened many years ago. Hashem should bless us, that we should be zeichet, that the Mashiach should come, and we should no longer have to suffer from having doled out the chet of the eagle in every single door. Thank you so much.
Who brings down the story about the woman?